Hello, welcome to Universal Soul Love. This is Detective David Love. Today I have our very special co-host, Susan Glynn, with us today. Lana's not available, but I'm very happy to have Susan. She's been on our show many times, co-hosting with me and also with Lana. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. Susan, you're a great healing codes instructor and energy healer and life coach and a really good friend of ours. And just really glad to have you with us today for the interview with Mick Goodwin, who's here with me. He's the founder and canine instructor for Dog Force Australia. And I'm just going to have you introduce yourself with us.
Yeah, thanks, David. Thanks, Mick Goodwin's my name. I was a former police officer in the New South Wales Police Force. I spent 29 years there and retired in 2014, where I spent the last 3 years of my service as the commander of the New South Wales Police Dog Unit. Now I'm out of the police force. I've commenced a private company where we specialise in delivering accredited training to law enforcement agencies and also the private sector. We are a registered training organisation, so we're currently delivering training contracts to some of the police forces throughout Australia, and we're also heavily involved in importing specialist dogs from Europe for use on those contracts, and also developing our own dogs for the clients that we are training for.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on the show today, Nick. This was really last minute. I just sort of I'm actually taking the canine handler class with you this week. Required New South Wales police training to do canine handler security work, and just this was very last minute. We just decided to do the show. We were going to do a rebroadcast, so I'm just really grateful that you decided to come on the show with us and talk about dog training and all sorts of cool things. And Susan, of course, will have a lot to add to this, because we want to start maybe talking about just dog behavior. And I know you have lots of interesting stories about how you train the dogs in terms of positive training and how they're used and how they relate to people and the trainers and the situations that you see, and even some interesting stuff about I don't know what term to use, maybe dog intuition. We don't really know how to define that. We were talking about that earlier and what that really is. But Susan, I'll just let you jump right in there, and you can just introduce yourself. I'm sorry we're just sort of diving right in here like this, but that's the nature of the
That's
show. We're
fine,
very
because
casual here.
I've been that's fine. I've been looking at your website, Mick, and it's lovely to meet you. You clearly have got a whole lot of fascinating lines of work with the dogs, and just so that you understand why it would be even useful to have somebody like myself online with you. I'm an energy medicine practitioner. I use various different tools. Best known, probably, I'm best known for using a thing called the Healing Codes. And the use of these energy tools for the last 20 years of my life has shown me that the human being can change their personal programming, and in the doing of that, they're changing their whole energy field of who they are. And the animals that live with these humans are changing and healing as well. And this has been very pertinent to me and close to my heart, the work you do, because years ago I was modeling, and I'd had a threat to my life because my location where I lived was printed in the newspaper under a promotional photograph of myself and others in the World Series of Tennis that was getting underway at those times. Like, World Series cricket lived, World Series tennis didn't, but I definitely needed the dog handler that was assigned to follow me around and make certain that I was safe for the week I was working on that particular thing. So your work is very close to my heart, because it saved me from a lot of I don't know what at that time. And now I would say that what David was just speaking to with the dog, being able to connect to the human and work with you, you are two energy fields. It's a quantum physics concept. And the dog has the capacity to sense as your emotions change or as your eyesight goes to something and your thought pattern crosses your mind, a thought walks across your mind even, the dog actually hears that, possibly as an energetic vibration. We are not clear exactly on that, but I've had animals myself, trained animals myself. I had a lot of connection with horses as well as dogs and cats, and also I live in the bush and notice the interaction with the wild creatures, and I find the wallabies come in and sit with me and will munch on a piece of apple with me and then spend time with me, and they absorb that with me, and I notice that they absorb my energy and they spend time just relaxing around me. So clearly they're not frightened of me, and there's something very, very special going on. Do you notice differences in the way that you train the animals, that you're noticing the animals pick up better on the trainings you're giving them?
Yes, we just spoke a short while ago in the course we're running at the moment today, where animals have got an innate intuition that really can't be explained in technical terms. But the example I gave to the class was actually one of my own dog that I've got at home, and he's an Airedale Terrier and very intuitive. And basically, the example I gave was that most mornings I will take him for a walk, which involves the same procedure where I'll sit on the bed and put my socks on and then put my shoes on to ready to go for the walk. Now, on the days that I am thinking about going for the walk, he'll immediately pick up on that and start getting very excited and jumping around, and which is what he does because he's going for the walk. Now, there's other days where something else might have happened and I may not be going for the walk. So, however, I'll go through the same procedure. I don't look any differently. I'm dressed the same way. I'm just the only change is that I'm not intending to walk out and take the dog. On these occasions, he quite clearly picks up on this. He mopes around. He'll sit there and not respond at all. In some ways, displaying some sad behaviour because he's not getting to go. I can say that those two, my actions in those two circumstances are identical. Yet the dog clearly picks up, when he's going to go and when he's not.
Yes, and one of the things in my work that is clear is that humans store their memories in pictures, and as we speak about what we're going to do or think about it, the animal may very well see in their mind the picture with the what we think are the words. They see the picture of what we are planning to do or not do and respond to that. And so that's how I would describe it at this point in time in the cutting edge work that we're doing. It's very brand new human knowledge that we're working with this energy healing stuff, and it definitely is showing us that animals get this immediate transference of not only healing but also the pictures in our minds, and that speaks to what you've just said. Your dog knows perfectly well that those days you're not going for the walk, he's not interested in not going for his walk.
Yeah. Maybe you can talk about, I mean, I've had a lot of experience with dogs too, because I've had quite a few German Shepherds and some training. But maybe you can talk about, in relation to what Susan just said, how the dogs learn and how you train them and how they relate to the trainers. And
yeah, well, basically the method of training can vary, but we talk about markers when we talk about dog training. And I work with a bunch of guys who are all ex-police dog trainers, And basically, the conditioning behaviours that dogs exhibit in that once you know when a dog is when a dog performs the desired task, well then he's rewarded, and that's basically called when we mark behaviour. So rewards can come in two forms. It's either to play, a dog deserves a play, or a dog's rewarded with food. So dogs have an innate desire to, they are traditionally animals that hunt, they're hunters and gatherers, so they hunt for food, and so any sort of food they'll eat. Mm. So it's an easy reward mechanism to train a dog, you know, to exhibit certain behaviour. So We use what's called operant conditioning. Some of the people out there may relate that to the traditional Pavlov method, where the Pavlov and the old scientist and his dogs he used a system of bells, and the experiment basically was that he gave dogs food at the same time he rang a bell, and eventually at some point in time he could ring the bell. And the dogs would start salivating, so they're basically expecting expecting a behaviour when there's a certain stimuli. So we use the same method. So when the dog performs a certain task that we want, whether it be searching or locating an object, performing a particular function, the dog's rewarded. And as I said, it can take the form of either a physical play, like we've got our Springer Spaniel explosive detection dogs. The reward that those dogs go for is simply to play with a tennis ball. Some methodologies involve, as I said, if the dog indicated where a narcotic or a explosive odour has been hidden, they would receive a small biscuit as a reward, so that they know that next time if they indicate on a similar odour, then that's going to mean either a play with a tennis ball or a biscuit.
And I'm just going to quickly maybe put you on a little bit of a spot. People who see videos of police dog training and security guard dogs often see, you know, videos of they have a perception and we've talked about this in class because there are some schools that do this, guard dog training schools that use, you know, negative consequences to train the dogs, and they hit them and beat them, and, you know, so and that's not what goes on here. I do know that because I've been in this class, and I know that you use positive dog training methods and techniques.
Yeah,
but that's the perception that I think maybe our audience might have of police dog training, and I just want to have you speak to that.
I guess there's police dogs used all over the world, but I'd be very surprised if any of those agencies use negative training techniques. It's not necessary. It doesn't work anyway. Mm-hmm. And basically, what whatever desired effect they're getting from the dog from negative training techniques is more instilling fear in the dog, you know, may be to the untrained eye a desired behaviour from the dog, but in fact it's just the dog reacting in a fear mode. So, you know, unfortunately there are unscrupulous agencies out there that will train dogs in the wrong manner. It's probably more because they don't know how to train them in the right manner.
Mm-hmm.
Training dogs in the correct way, look, it's not an easy thing to do. It takes time. It's like anything takes time. Mm. If you want to do it properly. I think some of these other training organisations, if you could call them that, are taking the quick way to a desired result. But as I said, the desired result really isn't the result anyway.
No, because I think if you're treating your dogs like employees and they're workers and if you want good employees, then obviously you're not going to beat your employees into submission and use fear-based techniques, because you're not going to get the best possible performance out of them ultimately. and
absolutely.
So this long-term success is really limited, I would think. And you get a dangerous dog, and you get a civil liability, I think, with these kind of dogs that are trained to be dogs, trained with those methods.
Dogs are no different to humans. That if they're treated, you know, if they're ill-treated, they may perform what they're supposed to, what the desired outcome is for a period of time. But I mean, they will also be very damaged in the process. And we only have to look at the prisoner of war type camps that were around during the war, where some of those soldiers were, you know, beaten to build railways or whatever was the case. They did that, but at the conclusion of it all, they ended up very very damaged people. Same with dog. If you want a dog to protect a junkyard or whatever, and you beat that dog so that it barks, whoever comes near it, sure, they're achieving the outcome of having a barking dog in a junkyard, but really that dog will be damaged to the point where it'll never be any good for anything else other than that. And so effectively that dog will be a junkyard dog until the day it dies.
Right.
As I said, it'll be damaged. But, I mean, police dogs, the art of training a police dog or a good security dog is that dog needs to switch on and then switch off. So it needs to have the training from the handler so that it knows when it's going to work. And that is usually there'll be indicators that the dog will have been trained to pick up on. And usually it might take the form of getting put on a particular lead or a particular collar or a harness. That dog would know that once that harness goes on, that it's going out to look for a criminal, or it's going out to look for drugs, or it's going out to look for bombs. The dog gets excited and it wants to work. It goes and works as hard as it can for its reward, which will come shortly after there's a successful result.
Yeah, and I think there's a high degree of trust involved between the handler and the canine. I think actually this is a good point for Susan to step in, because I know you're kind of very knowledgeable in this area when it comes to sort of what reduces to fear and love.
Absolutely, and trust is vital. Mick, you mentioned that the dogs get damaged as humans do, and precisely that is where my work comes in, because we are finding that as humans are mending their fear issues in life, and everything is underpinned by only two things, and that is a response where you can be open and relaxed and loving, or a response that is contaminated in some way to various different degrees with fear. And you said it in one with the dogs, they also are punished. They go into fear, and that also makes the dog an unpredictable partner for you to work with, because you possibly would then not be able to fully trust the animal to come forward into what you need it to in a positive way. Whereas if you're loving with that dog, it will it will come forward into that. With the energy work I'm doing, what we've noticed is as people heal themselves and they have animals in that situation around with them, mostly domesticated animals at this point in time, but what happens is they are then feeling safe to do things that they haven't done before. They are gaining skills, and also the most important thing I would say to you is the senses are showing up to be very subtle but expanding very quickly. And as you train with loving touch, and the dog knows when it's at work and it knows when it's at home and relaxing and at play and its normal dog self, that dog is an expanded field of sensing energy in all of those states when it is lovingly trained and the focus is on love and reward. And that builds an incredible field of trust as well. And all of this is an energetic field that interacts all of the time, is what I've learned from my work.
Yeah, well, a huge issue too between the dogs and the handlers is bonding. And the bonding can only be achieved by a mutualistic relationship where, whether you call it respect or love, and that's spent by time together. It's spent by pleasant experiences together. You know, these dogs, it's not all about work. It's about running through the fields. It's about running around down the beach and swimming and chasing the ball and having fun. You know, the dog needs to know that that all those experiences are good things to have with the handler, and they do. And then of course, when it's time for work, then work's work. And although the dog doesn't see it as work, the dog sees it as a challenging play. It does certain things that it's going to enjoy a reward for at the end of it. It gets excited. That excitement brings out performance. And
they're very loyal. And I heard you say, or our other instructor saying, that one of the biggest parts of dog training, for police dogs or security dogs, or I guess any kind of dog training, is the and that people tend to miss is the grooming, and not only the grooming but just the playtime. That's, you know, I guess that's part of the bonding, part of the
absolutely
whole experience.
I mean, you saw Dave would have saw with our grooming part of the course. Dogs love it. Like, they love, who doesn't love getting a comb pulled there through their hair? You know, and so the dogs enjoy a groom and a comb and a bit of a pat, and I mean, that's all time to bond. And at the same time, the dog's receiving essential health, daily health care. So
they're being cared for.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's like any relationship. I mean, we're talking about relationships in general really a lot on this show, and everything is a relationship. So, you know, the relationship between a trainer and a handler and the dog is just as important, and probably the basic principles are the same, it looks like.
Yeah.
Yes, I would chime in there and say that touch and hugs and patting, it works for me. I love to be touched and handled and patted, and it makes me feel safe. While I feel safe, then the animal I'm with feels safe, and that's another way to say it, is a bonding thing. But feeling safe is such a very ground root necessity for humans in life and in a relationship. We're finding that relationships are vitally important. And if that dog feels safe with you and you feel safe with the dog, every time you touch each other and look at each other, even looking at each other, and the sound of your voice transferring to the dog, your life force energy transfers constantly while you're with the dog, and its life force energy transfers to you too. So it is a team cooperation.
We've done a bit of work with companion animals with the military. There's an increasing need for some of our veterans who have come home, and there's an organisation that's set up now that link these veterans with either rescue dogs or companion dogs. But the results for that, to address, you know, the post-traumatic stress disorder issues, have been phenomenal. We've contributed to that program, we see some of our police brothers, terribly affected by that condition, and so it's been a great success in Australia, and I believe it's also being rolled out throughout the world.
Exactly. That's fantastic. Is absolutely a part of my work. I have clients who have been part of the SES, the emergency police and ambulance force, also American military. I have a client from the American military, and the post-traumatic stress is immensely assisted by the energy work that I do, and having a loving pet, because they look into your eyes and they are unconditionally loving you. And the power of that is incredibly healing, and precisely what you're saying. So I think that there's an enormous field. More, I mean, even small ponies are being used, miniature ponies. And
that's right.
I had my own miniature pony. They too are being used as seeing eye animals, and are able to go on board a plane and travel with their person, as the dogs are doing. But it just is a fascinating field of change and expansion for us.
No, that's so true. It's growing, certainly in Australia. I've had my Swiss Shepherd Ashtar on Virgin Airlines on a domestic flight in Australia. So they're more and more accepting of that now. I mean, it's America's just a very different place. It's hard to compare anything in Australia to America when it comes to things like this, security or police work or emotional support animals, disability issues. But but things are changing in Australia. I can see that. So lots of positive things happening too.
Yeah, just having spent some time in the States, I think we've got a long way to go in Australia. I mean, dogs are such a large part of the American culture, in that they're welcome on planes, they're welcome on in most motels, and I think Australia got a little way to go there. We recognise the importance of companion dogs in people's recovery, and of course that largely involves people moving around travelling. So I think there's some room there for improvement, and I'd certainly like to see it happen a lot more wider in this country than as it does in the States.
Yeah, we call that reasonable accommodation. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, David.
That's okay, go ahead.
Just, I was going to say that I'm noticing that dogs are among a number of other animals also that are being able to be trained to be human support for people who are incapacitated in various different ways. So not just an emotional support, not just a guide dog for a person who is not sighted, but a support person, I will call the animal a person, because they have the feelingness of understanding what the human is going to need next for somebody who is disabled, and therefore they're an integral part of the caring support that human being needs. And the interplay between the human and the creature becomes very blurred in just whose needs are being met the most in that, because the animal feels needed too. And dogs are beautiful with that. They are very, very quick to pick up on, and very loving and very capable, because they don't have a lot of the judgmental, critical and evaluating mindset that humans have. And this actually is, I think, a very big benefit to the humans who have the support of those animals. And I'd love to hear what Nick was saying about Australia expanding its understanding of this further, because I think it's wonderful. And surely, Nick, there would be some animals that you begin to train and find that they are perhaps not going to be quite what you need in your work, but they might filter into some of the areas that we've opened up here.
Yes, there is a fair bit of work done. What can you just sort of elaborate a little bit on what you mean by that?
Yes, when you're training your dogs, I'm wondering if some of those are then noticed to be not going to fulfill the job that you're going to need as completely. Maybe you are able to filter those particular dogs that are not going to be useful in your work to other chores, like being part of a support person for a disabled person, an accompany dog, for somebody.
Oh, right.
And therefore,
yeah,
they will be.
Yeah, that's exactly what we've done. We had a dog that that was going to be a police dog. However, just through obviously there's certain criteria required for a police dog, which he fell just a tad short in, but was going to make a great companion dog for what we thought was one of the military guys. So I think I forget the name. It's it was the organisation that does deal. We contacted them and we patched that dog in with one of the guys that had come back from Afghanistan.
Yes, excellent. That's just wonderful, because that's very helpful. One point I'd like to make. Excuse me. Sorry about that.
No worries.
You mentioned that dogs that are damaged are irrevocably damaged. This is one of the belief systems that is now changing. One of the things that is happening out of the work that I'm doing is changing the deep programming and beliefs in humans is also doable with dogs and other animals too. Those animals that have been damaged, hurt, traumatized, those are energy patterns within our thinking, within our deep, deep memory data. This is now changeable because the damage is a vibration. Vibrations are collapsible from one patterning of vibration to another. Therefore, PTSD is collapsible and mendable. Therefore, damage in the animal is also retrievable. The animal is able to be rehabilitated energetically, and this is a brand new field that is really just at the very, very beginning stages. I don't know if you've seen Dr. Oz, the heart surgeon, American heart surgeon, who has his own television show, and he actually utilizes people who use energy processes in his operating theater, working on the feet and lower limbs of people while he does open heart surgery. He wasn't very popular for it, but he noticed that the people were making recovery so much faster, and there's a whole range more of information along those lines. So this stuff is now mendable. It is not a lifelong hurt that a person has to put up with, or that an animal has to put up with.
No, you're right, Susan. In the last training class I took, bodyguard training class, the instructor, he's a former Aussie military man, and we watched a video on that, and we talked about that. He works with PTSD soldiers, suffered trauma, and we spent a lot of time talking about that very thing, and it is an emerging field of technology, and so it's really interesting that people are actually, it's not a lifelong condition that people have to suffer with anymore. So our views on this are changing. But I guess at this point, we're going to take a music break, but I don't think we're going to. We'll just work right through and keep talking. I just want to give you the chance to also talk about school.
Said.
Yeah, Susan, go ahead.
I'm just asking, did Nick understand what I was just saying about the this is repairable? What do you feel about that, Nick?
I guess I've seen some dogs that have been through some terrible circumstances and been nurtured back to a better way of life. But I've also seen some that just can't. And That's the reality of it. Sorry, and as tragic as that may be, it's not 100% achievable in all circumstances. But I've seen some great things on the internet where dogs have been rescued in appalling condition, very badly treated, through whatever and through a lot of love and care and rehoming that those dogs have been able to live out a great life for the rest of their days. But unfortunately, I've also seen cases where there's other dogs that Even recently, we went to New Guinea to conduct some training over there with one of the mining organisations, and the handlers over there were all Papua New Guinea guys. And there's one particular dog there that had been traumatised, and not by the handlers. It suffered some trauma alternate to that location, and unfortunately, one of our best handlers was involved in trying to turn that dog around, but we just couldn't do it, and unfortunately, she had to be euthanized.
Yes. Nick, what I would offer is the possibility of, did those people apply these latest energy healing techniques to that dog? And if not, then maybe with the introduction of, and it's quite weird and wonderful, it is quantum physics in action, but maybe that if that wasn't utilised, maybe that dog has got, those kinds of dogs have got a new place that they can apply that and just see what may be possible, because it is showing quite remarkable things, and it is not traditionally known at this point in time how to do this energy healing, but it's very simple and very easy to do.
Yeah, well, it's something that, I'll be honest, I wasn't aware of until I met Dave today. So, we'll be open to any sort of options that might present themselves in the future.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there's people who could step forward, and you know, they'd wanna, that are really talented in that field, that in energy healing, that would want to volunteer to demonstrate how that can work and work with injured dogs. And you know, over time, I'm sure there'd be more acceptance if it was demonstrated that this worked, and people all over the people who work with dogs could actually see this firsthand, because you know, and in our work, I guess seeing is believing, and that leads to acceptance. Absolutely. And use of that kind of technology. So anything's possible. I think investigators are always open-minded. We're analytical, but we're very open-minded. So if it works, it works, right?
It's the experience of it that shows people new things, and it will come.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. That's a really fascinating area to talk about. But I also, Nick, I wanted to just give you the opportunity to talk about the school and what we're doing here. You know, and your website, of course, and anything you want to talk about.
Thanks for the opportunity, Dave. Dog Force Australia was established in 2014, and basically, as I alluded to earlier, we are a training organisation that trains law enforcement agencies. We've currently delivered two contracts with the Northern Territory Police, where we've trained them in general purpose police dog handling and also drug detection dog handling. We contract some of our trainers from the United Kingdom and also Europe, who come to Australia to deliver that training, which we see as a huge benefit for this country, because they're bringing with them new and contemporary training methodologies from overseas, which we don't get to see a great deal of in Australia. We've also worked with the Army, with the West Australian Police, and we're looking soon to be working with the Victorian Police and also possibly the Tasmanian Police. So there's lots happening on that front. We also are involved in training the private security industry, which is what you're doing today, Dave.
Right.
Where individuals who want to get themselves qualified for a security guard dog license in their respective states, they're basically we prepare them with the right training so that they can then go along to their different jurisdictions and apply for their licences. We've got a website which outlines all the courses that we do offer, which is www.dogforceaustralia.com.au. We basically have got all our courses listed on that site, and along with all our trainers' experience and a little bit about what we offer. We also have our own detection dogs. We've got a narcotics detection dog and also a a couple of explosive detection dogs. And we use those dogs at the special request of clients. We've used the explosive dogs on the Ed Sheeran concert when he came out to Australia last year. One of our dogs searched the stadium proactively for any explosives prior to that going into lockdown. And we also recently assisted with a rather large church organisation that came to Sydney. And they wanted to make sure that everything was okay before they conducted their seminar. So we do offer these services to private clients. The dogs that we use are trained to the same level as police dogs are, and as our handlers are trained to the level of police dog handlers as well. So we're covering a whole range of different specialisations at our company, and it's all exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. I think people really do get excited about canine police dogs and explosive detection dogs and cadaver sniffing dogs, because they've seen Hollywood and YouTube videos, and generally people do get pretty excited about it, at least especially in the United States, where it's fairly popular. And I mean, you offer a lot here. Your experience is expensive. The trainers have a lot of experience, and I've seen the course booklet. You have a lot of pretty fascinating courses for people that are interested in getting into canine training. And
we're also we're about to start a project with the Australian Standards industry where Dog Force Australia is working to establish competency standards in the country, similar to what has been established in the UK and the USA, where dogs that will be used in the security industry, whether they be detection dogs or security dogs, will have agreed competency standards applied to their use. So basically at the moment there's no competency standards that a dog's required to meet to be used as a security dog. It's a rather unsatisfactory situation that unscrupulous operators can be operating with a dog that has no accredited skill whatsoever. So we hope that in the next period of time, when we get our approval, that we'll be able to work with the stakeholders in the industry to establish those standards, and given the fact that the terrorism threat throughout the country is, or throughout the world, should I say, is on the increase, there's going to be a significant need, I'd suggest, in this country in the next short time that private detection dogs are going to be more and more prevalent, as they are in the States and the UK, purely because the law enforcement agencies just simply won't be able to handle the requirements that certainly the private sector is going to need to address their risks.
Right, and we talk about the global issues a lot on this show, and we talk about it from a personal level. Like Susan will always say, your first relationship and your first agreement is always with yourself, and we talk about this on a global scale, which is just the outer workings of each individual's thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. And security is a basic necessity on the Maslow's pyramid of needs, just like food and water. And the security industry is providing a service of safety and security so that people don't feel these huge threats. And we're always exploring the meaning of security and the idea and the deliverance of it so that it's good for everyone. At least that's what we're trying to do on this show, and that's why we bring so many different types of guests with different careers and viewpoints and backgrounds on here. So, and you were about to say something, Susan, to add to that?
Yes, I just wanted to say to Nick, the breadth of the work that you're doing is really remarkable and vital, and I just wanted to say thank you for what you do. Really?
Yeah, thank you.
That simple. Thank you for what you do, because it is such an important thing. And one of the things I've noticed about the Australian Police Force and the security systems in Australia. We have a very grounded, pragmatic way of going about things. We're a very lucky country. And if we can keep that simple mindset going, I feel that the work you're doing is going to spearhead as a reputation of strength and simplicity and power of what you do in the global community. And I think that's very important for what you're doing.
Mm.
Yeah, thanks for that. I appreciate your comments. We are about, I mentioned this to the group here the other day, that we're not about money in this organisation. We do this because we're passionate about it, and
absolutely.
And we would rather conduct 1 5-star job than 10 1-star jobs. And it's about I told the group this morning that it doesn't matter where they go from this course, that they'll be leaving here as our friends, and that we will always be available to them no matter what in whatever they question they may have relating to dogs or dog handling. And I think that this is where we're doing at Dog Force Australia is we've created something that doesn't exist in this country. And I know that there are organisations similar to ours in overseas in the States and the UK, but it purely is to provide a service that hires and can deliver a very, very professional, reliable service. And this is not a sales pitch. It's simply to provide options for organisations or individuals that really do need to feel that element of safety. And if we can provide that sort of safety and comfort to individuals or organisations to make their life better, well, then that's what we're about.
Yeah, that's excellent.
It's an excellent intention. Excellent.
Yeah, and I just want to say that the instructors here are very respectful, and I noticed that just in the way they deliver the training, they're very respectful in terms of allowing the students to speak, and even the way they carry themselves and everything. I'm very impressed with the level of professionalism, and even with a lot of the police officers I see here in Australia that I've met in my limited experience, it's very different from what I experienced in the United States, where I did my work as a private investigator, working with lawyers in the court system, doing criminal defense and many other types of investigations. It's a very different culture, and because there's so many reasons for that, I'm not going to go into at this point, but just my experience here and there is just very different that way culturally. So
I've got a very Australian way of describing what I feel that is, if I may just put a point in there. The Australian people have a very no BS, a very grounded way of going about things. We cut to what's important and we stay steady to that far more easily than many other countries, and a lot has to do with the fact that the amount of trauma that is going on in Australia is less than in many other different countries, and it is very important that we take care of that and promote that. And that sounds to me precisely what you're speaking about, Nick, and why I feel that the work you do, the way you do it, and with your attitude of putting play into the dogs, that is extremely healthy. It is the balance. And although the work I've talked about from my point of view might seem like it's way out and far-fetched, it actually dovetails very neatly into what you're saying and what you are intending to do. And that, to my way of thinking, is really quite a good thing. And the Australians have a very special mindset. And taking care of that is very important, it feels to me.
I think you're right, Susan, and what you everything you've talked about does tie in very well with what Mick's doing and what Dog Force Australia is doing here.
Yeah, we get a lot of enjoyment out of what we do. We've tried to spread our word throughout Australia we do have a Facebook page as well, which we just started. We'd like to try and get messages out to to other countries about what we do, especially around the region in Asia, because some of the opportunities that we're DogForce are developing in Australia are sought after in Asia, and they haven't got the resources that we've got here, and so if we can provide something similar to what we did with the company in New Guinea. And that is just take our training services to those areas where they up until now probably haven't had anything at all.
Excellent. That's great. I think the Asian situation is the population is so high that people are used to working with everything in their life in such a tight, small area, whereas the Australian country is more expanded, and so the actual way that Australians do and say things is a more relaxed and open, expanded way, and that is one of the most subtle and unexpected good qualities that you just expressed, in that you just love what you do. That's very, very important in the relationship you create with the dog, and then the dog takes that with it in its work, and you take that into your training too. That then expands, and that is the emphasis on what's working that I would say keep doing, and it feels to me that's going to be your best advertising, really, more than actually bought advertising, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well,
does it feel like that?
Myself and the three partners, we're all very passionate about what we did when we were in the police, especially relating to the dogs. And it was only through circumstances that we've ended up now in retirement. But we basically made a decision of what we wanted to harness, what made us motivated and feel good when we were in our time in the police force, and we've ended up forming a company and surrounding ourselves every day with the stuff that really makes us want to get out of bed. And
gives you meaning.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun. You meet a lot of nice people, and you get to do what you love doing every day.
That's awesome.
And I feel very lucky for that, because there's a lot of people out there that don't necessarily get to do that.
That's true. Yeah, that's great. All right.
That's exactly what I was saying. You love what you do, and it filters into every aspect of your work, and it expands out from there. So more power to you.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Fantastic. I think we've just come to the end. Do you want to just give your website one more time?
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. So if anyone wants to read a bit more about DogForce Australia, they can find us at www.dogforceaustralia.com.au. Or find us on Facebook. Thanks very much, Doug.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming on the show, and thanks for hosting, Susan. We had a great show. I mean, it's different. It's in line with how we carry our show. It's very casual and conversational, and we sort of just go with the flow on Universal Soul of Radio. But I think that's what makes it enjoyable for me, and just appreciate both of you being here today.
And hopefully for the listeners too. That's lovely.
Thanks, Susan. Thanks. It's been a pleasure.
It has.
All right. Much
love. Thank you for your time.
Much love to all, and we'll see you next time on Universal Soul Love. Bye for now.
Bye for now.